WSBTRadio.com presents a fan's perspective on Notre Dame sports. This is Dome and Domer.
Hello again, everybody. You're listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. I'm Mike Sullivan, and joining me is Mike Brammer. And for the next 15 minutes, we're going to talk about the Heisman Trophy presentation and Notre Dame basketball. As football season winds down, we'll talk more about Fighting Irish hoops. If you have any comments or questions, send us an email, domeanddomer@wsbt.com. So, Mike, let's talk about the Heisman Trophy presentation. I don't think it was a shock that Brady Quinn did not win the Heisman, and Troy Smith did. But I think a lot of Notre Dame fans are a little frustrated and upset with the fact that Brady Quinn finished third. Do you think that was justified?
Well, unfortunately, in the Heisman, it doesn't matter where you finish if you don't finish first. But having said that, I do share that sentiment. I think, so many people have so many different ways of determining who the Heisman Trophy candidate is. I think it's the best player in college football, meaning that you take that guy and put him on any team in college football, and he's the best player on that team, or adds the most to it, or however you want to state.
That could easily be Brady Quinn, but it's clearly Troy Smith deserved it as well. You can make all kinds of arguments for Troy Smith.
No, I agree.
What about
True.
Brady finishing third? Is that a travesty?
Yeah, I think it is. Is it a travesty? I don't know. Maybe that's taking it a bit too far. I think it's unjust. I don't think anybody could realistically say, you know what, Darren McFadden was the better player, and therefore he's deserving of the number two vote. He wasn't even in it 4 weeks ago. The whole entire season it's been Troy Smith, Brady Quinn, for the most part. A couple things caused this. I think, one, Notre Dame fans feel slipped just because of the media bias that existed the entire year. Case in point, Troy Smith, even on a bad day, for instance, when he had 112 yards, two interceptions, one touchdown, the touchdown being on a 50-yard bomb, John Saunders' lead-in on covering that story is Troy Smith continues to distance himself.
Right, and I think Notre Dame fans, their frustration over Brady finishing third has a lot to do with the way this whole thing was played out throughout the year. Things like that with John Saunders. You could go to all kinds of internet sports sites, and they'd give their top five Heisman. And for most of the year, a lot of these guys didn't even have Quinn in their top five, but maybe here and there fourth or fifth. For most of the year, you had a lot of people not even – putting Quinn in the top ranking, and based on, I think, the Georgia Tech game, he gets out to what was a very good performance, 260 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions, rush for one. But the hype machine was so out of control by then that when Quinn didn't have 400 yards and five touchdowns, he had lost the Heisman right there.
Yeah, I agree. But I think people were looking for that excuse not to have him there. That's the problem. He started out the year with them waiting for him to slip up.
I agree.
Troy Smith, on the other hand, the whole year they were looking for excuses to give it to him. And that's, in essence, what the media bias was all about. It was them projecting him the Heisman winner from day one.
Well, I think there's a couple factors. One, Quinn goes in as the Heisman front runner. That's a bad spot to be in when your team doesn't live up to expectations. So unfairly, some of that's put on Quinn. Secondly, the Michigan game early in the year was just something he couldn't recover from. And then the negative, the bias that you talk about with Troy Smith and the way they reported things, it was just too much to take. When you've got many voices throughout the country week in and week out saying things like, well, Brady Quinn continues to pad his stats against lesser competition. But they don't say that against when Ohio State's playing Northwestern or Illinois or Northern Illinois or, any of the cupcakes they played, only when Notre Dame played. So I think the fact that he finished third, it's not ridiculous that Darren McFadden finished second, but just when you look at how the whole thing played out, it's a little tough to take because the kid certainly deserved, you can make a case for the Heisman, to finish first for Brady Quinn, not that Troy Smith didn't deserve it, but to finish third, I think, was a little tough to take.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, Quinn, of course, did win the Maxwell Award for outstanding player in college football. And historic, well, at least in the last maybe 10 years or so, it seems to me, in my opinion, that the Maxwell Award, is, you know, sort of runs counter to the hype of the Heisman. And so often you have somebody else winning the Maxwell Award who didn't win the Heisman. Or yeah. same with, like, the Walter Camp Award. I think Rocket won the Camp Award and finished second in the Heisman. So I thought that that was a tremendous honor for Brady Quinn and the program.
Who got the Davey O'Brien Award?
Troy Smith did, but Quinn won the Unitas Award, which the Unitas Award has more to do with or as much to do with character and citizenship and scholarship and those kind of things. And Quinn obviously is,
yeah,
is
something that doesn't exist in Ohio State. you saw the graduation rates, by the way, that just came out.
It's pathetic, Ohio State's graduation rates.
The lowest in all of college football.
Particularly for African Americans.
Yeah, 32%. Good job, guys.
Yeah, isn't that pathetic? Yeah, and you know, they just project that their Tressel projects that they're just so clean cut and whatnot, he's a snake. He was a snake at Youngstown State. Yeah. He was in trouble there too.
The only difference between Tressel and the Grease Monster is he dresses nicely.
The Grease Monster.
Well, whatever you want to call it.
the grease.
The slicer.
Okay. All right. Now you're making things up. Now you're making up phrases and words on us. Okay. Other awards that were handed out. Good to see Samardzija made first team All-American. And although he did not win the Blitnikoff and Carlson did not win the Mackey, it was still good to see Samardzija win a first team All-American spot. Sam Young was first team freshman All-American. So there were some good postseason awards handed out for Notre Dame players. But all that's window dressing, as we've said before and we'll continue to talk about for the next couple weeks. The Sugar Bowl is just huge in terms of the perception. These things, these anti-Notre Dame things that we all perceive in the media, will only change when we win that big game in the Charlie Weiss era.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Notre Dame, no doubt about it, has got a lot going for it going into this game as far as needing to win it. This is certainly not a letdown game for us in the least bit.
Well, I hope not. I hope people don't feel that way.
No. We've got everything to prove in this game. So, yeah, I mean, the ball's on our court. Charlie's going to have to come ready with guns blazing, and Notre Dame is going to need a win.
Yeah, this is a big-time opponent here in LSU. A couple other bits of news. Fifth-year players, these are, you know, this is speculation and rumor at this point, but rumors, persistent rumors are that John Carlson will come back, Trevor Laws will come back for a fifth year, and you're even Price, the punter, should be back for a fifth year. Sullivan, the center, is expected back. And then this name, what do you think about this? There's some rumors that Zibikowski will apply for a fifth year. Is that good or bad?
You know, it's interesting. Is he going to box again? Zibby's got a lot going for him. I think he would not be a first rounder, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Oh, God, he's not going to be a first rounder?
No, it wouldn't be a first rounder, but it wouldn't surprise me if he's a second rounder. I don't think too many guys are going to let him go. Simply because as an NFL owner, you got to be, you know, Zibby's a likable kid. He's the kind of guy you want. He's a Gary Fensick of the Chicago Bears. I mean, he is a guy you want back if they're smacking heads.
Well, you don't waste a second-round draft pick on something like that. You give it. You sign a guy, a free agent out of camp, something along those lines. But
if he's still there, that's the whole problem.
He did not have a good year. I don't think he helped his draft status at all this year. Now, he was hurt. You're hearing a lot about Zibikowski played hurt for most of the year.
That's what the rumors are. And, I mean, obviously, he didn't play an entire game. Zibby's not the kind of guy that goes on the sideline if he's actually not truly hurt.
Exactly.
So something is up with that. You just don't miss an entire game. I don't care if you are playing Navy.
Yeah. Maybe that's why he's coming back.
Could be. Yeah, it could be that he's got stuff to prove. And Zibby's the kind of guy, though, that I think projects himself higher than what he actually is, meaning that you look at him and you say, what a great football player. But if you sit there and analyze film, you think, boy, he gets sucked up a lot. And, coverage isn't exactly great. But the NFL scouts, they may have him at a different position. I mean, Notre Dame's got
him. He's not big enough to play linebacker at Notre Dame, let alone in the NFL.
Not linebacker, but maybe in certain nickel packages, they want that kind of rush corner. So who knows?
I think he could be a Bill Bates kind of guy. Remember Bill Bates played for the Cowboys?
Absolutely.
Made a career on special teams kind of guy. Yep. So recruiting continues to go well. Notre Dame's recruiting class, by some services, is ranked number one. It's consistently in the top 10 in most of the major recruiting services. But the key will be finishing strong. We can talk more about recruiting in the weeks ahead, but Irish fans should know that Charlie Weiss is putting together another great recruiting class, but it's not complete yet. So he's got a lot of work to do, and by all accounts, he's been out there on the road doing it. But let's turn our attention to maybe something very surprising, some surprising good news, and I'm not talking about the hockey team ranked in the top five. That is good news. But how about men's basketball ranked 21st in the AP poll this week, coming off of two back-to-back wins over ranked teams? What a week for Notre Dame basketball, defeating Maryland and Alabama in the same week.
Yeah, it really is an amazing turn for this team, knowing what the expectation was going in, because clearly in the last – well, in the Mike Bray era, this is his least talented team by far.
I think that that's very safe to say. And some of the more talented guys on paper maybe weren't great character guys or great team guys, good guys to have in the locker room. But this group appears to be have that intangible, that chemistry that you need to be competitive.
Yeah, and I think the landscape of college basketball has changed drastically in that regard the last 7 years, basically. You got kids coming in, leaving after 1 year, leaving after 2 years, and in a lot of cases, kids leaving when they have no business leaving. Everybody in their right mind's telling them, look, you don't want to go on the draft, and then they don't even get drafted.
You wouldn't be talking about Taryn Francis, would you?
Well, the point being is that, and I think it has to do with a couple other things. You got the NBA, but that's not the end of the rainbow anymore. There are guys being very well paid playing in Europe. There's even a league down in Mexico. I mean,
Exactly, right.
So you got these kids that are just not interested in school to begin with, and they get money waved in front of them, there they go. Now, I think that being said, what that does is it opens up the arena for good basketball coaches who can put together a team that drives off chemistry and plays good, solid, fundamental basketball.
And that appears to be what Mike Bray's got on his hands this year.
It does. I don't know, and I could look up the stats, and I'm sure I wouldn't find it. I don't know of another time when Notre Dame played a top-10 team and went 19 minutes without turning the ball over.
Isn't that something? And you're talking about the Alabama game. No, just over 19 minutes without a turnover against Alabama. And then, of course, that streak was ended with two back-to-back turnovers with under 4 minutes to go that saw a Notre Dame 10-point lead shaved to 3 points, and with just over 3 minutes to go, the lead's down to three, and this now is the key point in the game. The Irish come up with a huge three from Russell Carter. How about the game he played? 27 points, just played fearlessly. Carter nails that three, then comes back with a driving move where he pulls up and hits a baseline jumper, and bang, Notre Dame's back in control of the game. Several defensive turnovers in a row, and the place was rocking. The atmosphere in the Joyce Center for the blackout game against Alabama was really, really great, and it made you think of the old days back in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, it did. However...
No, don't give me any however. I was there.
Yeah, there weren't a sellout. There weren't 11,119 fans there. There were 10,000-something. I mean, it was not a sellout.
Well,
many times in college basketball history at Notre Dame have you had the number four team show up and you don't sell out?
Yeah, I agree with you. That's unusual.
That is disappointing. Now,
but the 1,000 people that weren't there, the bums in the gold seats that weren't there, we didn't miss them, okay? I'm telling you, the place was great.
The place was absolutely rocking. I'm just saying that. That gives you an idea of the expectations going into this year.
It does. I agree.
Nobody had any idea they were capable of beating Alabama.
I think maybe except Mike Bray and the guys on that team. A couple things in closing here about this basketball team. The young guys have really showed that they can play competitive basketball against top talent. So Torrey Jackson, Heron Godey, Zach Hillsland, these guys who are getting their first action, Hillsland being a sophomore but really didn't play much last year, they're really showing that they're ready for the wars in the Big East. And that's what I take from these two wins more than anything else. Those guys really came up big. And, of course, Kurz and Falls and McElarney and Carter have, we've known that those guys can play. So I think good things ahead for the Irish that look to be 12-1 heading into the Big East season. They should
still a lot of basketball to play. I mean, it's a bit early to get all excited about this, but
hey, we're going dancing. I'm telling you,
the win we've won seems to be a really good indication that we are headed in the right direction.
I agree, absolutely.
20 wins is a very good probability with this team that we would have thought wasn't capable of 12 to start the season.
that's right. Okay, we'll have more on Fighting Irish basketball in the weeks ahead. We'll be back next week to preview the Sugar Bowl and continue to talk about the progress of the Notre Dame men's basketball team. Until then, you've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. I'm Mike Sullivan, along with Mike Brammer. If you have any questions or comments, send us an email, domeanddomer@wsbt.com. Until then, remember, I'm Dome, but he's Domer.